Welcome to Mid-Century Modernism with Monique, your go-to podcast for all things architecture, design, and innovation within mid-century modernism. Join me on a journey through the golden age of design, where every episode brings you fresh inspiration for modern living and unlocks the secrets of this iconic and timeless style. What are we waiting for? Let's get started. Thank you everyone for joining me for another episode of Mid-Century Modern with Monique. I am so excited to welcome John Klopp today to the show. Thank you so much for being here, John.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I've known John and seen his work for the last, I think it's 7 years, 8 years. And I've worked with him with clients, with buyers that were looking for ideas on how to remodel their new homes. And you have been such a calm, cool, and collected leader in this design battle that we've all been in. So I want to thank you for that and wanted to give homeowners and enthusiasts a little insight into your work, what you do, and your expertise. And I'd love to start by asking you the common question, which is, why do homeowners need an architect? Why can't they just do it themselves? Why can't they just design their own projects?
Well, first of all, thanks so much and for your kind words and for having me on the show.
Sure, it's really nice
to be here.
Sure.
Why do people need an architect? The architect is the person who sees the whole project, the whole vision, and who holds that vision from the beginning to the end of the construction, beginning of the design, through the technical phases, and contractor selection process, during construction, all the way to the end. Architects are the person who help people develop their program. A lot of people come to us with a vague wish list of how they'd like to use their house, and maybe don't have it even really thought through until we walk through the house together and talk about what they like, what they don't like about the house, get them to answer some of those questions, and then to start reflecting upon how the house works for them or doesn't work for them.
Mm-hmm.
And as the architect, I'm listening to all the things that people say so I can, you know, incorporate those into the design that's going to happen if they decide to hire us after that initial walkthrough.
Right, right. So you're essentially being a thought leader in what they want to do. Sometimes they don't have any idea of how to fix their home, how to make it comfortable, how to make it livable, how to fix the bathrooms. It's usually, for me, the common problem that buyers have is, how do we fix the bathroom and, you know, the bathrooms in the kitchen? Is that what you see that's the most common issue?
People do come to us with this project started because my bathroom was really outdated. And then I started thinking about how I was going to, you know, make the bathroom larger. But then that would have impacted the other bathroom. And so now I was looking at what can we do to maybe, you know, rearrange the house or expand the home. And now it's gotten to be such a big project, I don't know how to approach it.
Yeah.
But it does start with a simple thing. Or you know, hey, we had this pipe leak in our bathroom. Mm-hmm. And we had to tear it all out. And now we're looking at it and we're thinking that we need to remodel this house and we need to gut it down to the studs and do everything, right? So,
right.
Yeah, it can be
like
that.
It's on and on, and it doesn't stop then, actually. I think it's interesting when, you know, people get into the nuts and bolts of these homes. If you're hearing my little French bulldog, Walter, he's starting to snore a little bit here. But he wanted to see John, so we're letting him sit in on the interview. So when people are, you know, diving into this architecture, what is it about this modern approach to design that resonates with you? I know with me, I feel comfortable. I feel like myself in these homes. It's my aesthetic. Just standing in them, you know, you see this indoor-outdoor light and you just feel more at ease. Has this always resonated with you?
Yeah, from the very beginning. Yeah, I love the way that the mid-century modern architecture borrows the landscape and brings it in and blurs that boundary between inside and out.
Yeah.
And I love the simplicity of it. I don't know about you, but life can be hectic and work can be hectic and traffic. And when you get to your house, you want it to feel like it's a place of rest where you're at rest and the house is understandable. It's laid out proportionally. The light comes in evenly, And you don't have to worry about the house. Right. There's nothing nagging you about the house. It's stripped down and simple and clean.
Right.
So I really love that about this style. And I really like the fact that the style has a lot of natural and warm materials in it.
True.
And that is something that, you know, I think resonates in general with people who really like that warmth and the texture and the feeling of, you know, the natural, timeless materials in the home.
Right. Organic architecture, sort of.
And if you think of it as organic, what you're really doing is creating a backdrop for nature.
Exactly.
Right? So the home, you know, is in a modern style, modernist approach, isn't necessarily about making an icon that you look at.
Right.
It's not trying to be an object in the field. And sometimes, of course, it is an object in the field, but there's a ethos behind modernism, which is we're designing for human scale, for human use, and it's supposed to be something that promotes, you know, a feeling of belonging and health and welfare in the people who enter and use the space, right?
Yes.
And so if we're creating this type of wall of glass type of architecture, or big sliding doors that open out and let you blur the outdoors and the indoors, what we're really doing is we're saying, nature is out there. Nature is timeless, it's ever changing, the sun changes, plants will grow, they bloom, they change. It never gets boring, it never gets tiring.
Right, I love that, I absolutely love that. So for this modern approach to design, which design aspects of Eichler's and mid-century modern homes resonate with today's clients and in living culture, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, certainly it's not the bathroom size.
Yeah.
But what I think what resonates with people today is what we were just talking about, that sort of feeling of the connection to nature and the blurring of the boundaries between indoors and outdoors, mm-hmm. the way the light makes the spaces feel much bigger than they are.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that what people are looking for in a home is a place that they can raise their family or work or live in comfort with a nice view potentially. And if not a view, maybe a courtyard view.
Right.
And that the house is with the small punch little window holes that don't allow that.
Right.
Once you've been in a mid-century modern home or an Eichler or a modern style house, you can't go back and live in another kind.
Right. You can't. You cannot. I think after living in these homes, you would feel so claustrophobic living in anything else without seeing the outside, without having that huge space and all the glass. I definitely feel out of my element when I'm in regular traditional style homes. You know, we're always looking for the windows. We're always looking for the exterior.
Or we're looking for the, you know, is it fancy woodworking or is it some kind of decorative trim or some kind of artwork or something, which is one type of design that people also appreciate. But it's not the same as do I feel like really grounded in this house, right?
Right. So what have you found are the most common problems with that? Have you found that most people, because of the square footage, it's that these homes are very distressed or that they want a bigger space? What is the most common problem that you've seen?
Well, yes, all those things. The homes are getting much, much older. And a lot of the systems in the home weren't designed to last this long. So as every year passes, these homes are in more need of renovation. That's a fact. Design-wise, though, I think people are okay with living in a smaller home if it feels big.
Right.
And some of the spaces in the homes were open and open concept, and some of the spaces were tight and small and didn't feel big.
Mm-hmm.
And what we like to do with these type of homes is accentuate the openness and push it to another level.
Right.
And try to make those connections, make the smaller bathrooms a little bit bigger if we can. And if we can't, maybe there's going to be a way to bring the light in with a skylight down the wall or put a big wall of glass. Maybe it's frosted glass, but big wall of glass along the backside of the bathroom so that people can get plenty of feeling of light and that open feel.
Right. And feel bigger than it actually is.
Yeah.
Right.
And when you have a smaller room that's got a big wall of glass on it and you can look out to either your backyard or to the view in the distance, then it feels like an infinite room almost.
Right.
So I think that people don't mind the houses being small. They do mind them being dark. A lot of them are overly wooded in terms of everything having turned brown, the whole home being brown.
Right.
And where people do really like that natural wood feel, they don't want to get down to that like basement rec room feeling where it's all wood panels everywhere.
Right.
And so I think people really want to brighten the homes.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some education about maybe you don't need to paint your ceiling. Maybe we can brighten it some other way.
Yes.
Right.
That's what we did here was, I always hate when people paint over the mahogany, but I understand wanting a lighter space. So I think leaving the ceilings original, then you can do what you want with the interiors.
And the walls will be, you know, maybe they'll be white in general, but you can use some of those mahogany panels as accent walls.
Yes.
You can still have a very nice balanced feel to the house.
Right. Yeah. Do you have any favorite architects that, you know, you always look to with this aesthetic? Did you have any that were in particular your favorites growing up, maybe?
Sure. I mean, you know, it's interesting. The architect that inspired me the most during school was Peter Zumthor, who's not a mid-century modern architect, but he's a Swiss architect who does a lot of work on blending indoors and outdoors. And what drew me to him at first was when I was in school studying the different barriers and connections between indoors and outdoors,
mm-hmm.
and how you can use architecture to create more privacy or more openness or some balance between the two. And mm-hmm. what kind of spaces do you create where, say, like in a mid-century modern house, you might have the fully indoor space, and then you might open the sliding door and walk out under a big roof overhang. And now you're sort of half in and half out. And then you go out past the end of the roof overhang and you're in the open courtyard, right? And now you're fully outside. And there's that three-step blend between indoors and outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to visit some of his work on a traveling fellowship back in school and saw the, you know, some of those buildings firsthand with big glass walls that slide open on a retirement home that he built. And he has a really beautiful spa and thermal baths building, which is
nice.
So it's very indoor-outdoor in that it's on a hill in Switzerland, and if you sit out and, you know, walk down the halls, there's big windows and there's sitting areas with these big panels of glass. You can see the view and just relax. But then all the little pool areas had different skylights bringing in the light differently to the different spaces. So some of them were a little darker, some of them were really bright and airy. And yeah, it was. I didn't go to the spa to swim and enjoy the spa because I was on a traveling fellowship and didn't have any money.
Right.
So I took advantage of his indoor outdoor architecture to climb in through a very large window.
Wow! Right.
And just walk around for a little while, and then excuse myself through the front door.
That is so, I don't know that architect, but that's so interesting that I think a lot of architects take, even if they're not, you know, mid-century modern focused, there's so much to learn from this specific architecture that I think everyone can benefit from these aspects of it.
Yeah. A lot of the mid-century modern style sort of, in my take, my view, comes from Japan. You know, the traditional temples and so forth in Japan with the wood construction, the post and beam type construction, the shoji panel walls that slide, which has been translated over time into sliding glass doors and so forth. And the use of the texture and the natural wood, courtyard living, the private presentation to the street, the openness of the interior courtyard.
I love that. I learned about that a little bit through studying Frank Lloyd Wright. I think that was, didn't he, when he started the Usonians, was based off of his trip there and his inspiration there.
Absolutely.
That's amazing.
And other mid-century modern architects also the same way. And that aesthetic also has a lot of modularity, very clean joinery, very simple forms. And that has also found its way into the modern and mid-century modern repertoire.
So cool. What is your favorite part of this work? And what is your favorite part of this great community that we're in?
Well, I'll tell you, working with the clients who own mid-century modern homes is rewarding, because all of them, it seems, are really interested in design.
It's true.
And I don't hear that from my other architectural colleagues who work on different types of homes. Maybe for those homeowners, it's just a home. But for this community, it's a home, but it's also a work of art that they live in. And they want to live in that type of a home. They're excited about it, and they know they have something special.
Right.
And I guess before our time, right, there was a time period after the mid-century and before maybe before the late 90s or something, where these homes were kind of looked down on and people didn't really
understand them
or even want them. And they were like priced lower than other similar sized homes, and people did these, you know, sort of remodels where they put Greek columns,
horrible,
or Bavarian gingerbread and like heavy plaster or like
pillars in the front or a white picket fence or something,
or the window boxes with the flowers or something, and those are all, that's all well and good, but I think now the homeowners, and we've actually undone a few like that, and homeowners who are buying these homes now, they really want to bring it back to something more appropriate to the style.
Yes. Yeah, I've loved working in this community of like-minded people and so many artists. And I think you're right. People look at it as a work of art. They're sort of their own blank canvas with each home. And each homeowner gets to be the artist and create their beautiful artwork there. I think that's really beautiful. And I think we're all bonded in that way. But I think from your work and from seeing how you keep the integrity of the architecture too, it's important to work with someone like you because you understand them and because you can offer different solutions. How often do you come across contractors that just don't understand?
We always make a very strong recommendation to our clients to hire a contractor who has worked on these type of homes, who knows them. There's such a learning curve. It's not to say that a good general contractor can't learn to become an Eichler contractor over time. Certainly they can. And we've worked with people who at first maybe hadn't worked on a lot of Eichler homes, but now they're, after working together on a number of projects and having learned the ropes,
right,
we can go to them now. But it's really important, if you're the homeowner who has the project with the learning curve, to understand that you're going to have some problems with the schedule, cost overruns, uncertainty as to whether the outcome will be what you wanted, designs that may not come into fruition, compromises, that type of thing during the process.
Right.
And that's really because the technical aspects of the design, but fundamentally it's because of the planning that needs to be done to work on a home like this. When we talk about contracting in general sense, there's a regular order of events where the contractors sort of, they frame it really big, and then they buy a window that has lots of space around it, and then they drywall up near the window, and then they take a big piece of wood and cover over the gap, right? And then it looks normal in the end. When you're doing that in a modern style house, you've got to think about that window's size and dimension. It's going to go wall to wall, floor to ceiling. And if you're pouring concrete, even the very beginning of the project, and you're putting in the hardware to hold the framing and stuff, you got to put it in just the right spot within like an eighth of an inch.
Right.
And so contractors have to think about the plumbing in the concrete slab ahead of time, and the electrical, and how you're going to run electricity when you can't run it through a sheet of glass that goes from floor to ceiling and wall to wall. And so really they have to step back and plan and think ahead and meet with their subcontractors, talk about it. It's complicated.
It's very complicated. And I think now, too, with COVID and inflation, you and I were talking about that before, you've seen that change drastically with the market, right?
Yeah, I was talking about the rate of inflation over the last 20 years and how it's something like double the regular rate of inflation nationwide, something like 5 point something percent per year that we've seen for our projects, for
right. Yeah. Right. And the cost of construction has gone up. And how has that changed the homeowner's view of what they're doing? I mean, I'm sure timelines are being pushed back. You know, I know in California, because we've seen so many different, we've had fires, we've had, you know, flooding, we've had all of these things happen. Has that really changed the mindset of your clients?
I think every client is a different story. And so, you know, we hear a lot of different approaches to the budget question. I think one of the things that's tricky about being a homeowner and considering doing a renovation is you'll talk to your friends and you'll talk to your neighbors and you'll find out what they did and what it cost them and so forth. And you'll be shocked because the numbers are so high that you can't even believe they could possibly be true. And then you start your project, and what you find out is that information you got from your neighbor was from 5 years ago. And the costs are actually like decently higher than what they told you.
Right.
And it's heartbreaking.
Right.
And we have to be the first person to break people's hearts when they call on the phone and they ask me, you know, I'd like to do a project of a certain size and this is my budget. And my response is always to try to, you know, say, well, we can either do a project of that size and find out what the budget's going to be, and maybe we'll be lucky. We can look at trying to target the project to a budget number, which we can, you know, maybe look at the most priority scope and things like that. Or we can consider, you know, what are the other approaches that could be cost savings for you and still get you the bulk of what you wanted done without having to sacrifice huge swaths of scope.
Mm-hmm. Right. Is that hard for you to adjust that with your vision and your design too? I mean, I really respect you for the work that you do. Is really, really, every home that I've ever seen that you've ever done, it was completely redone. So I've seen, I remember a client had asked you to help them with their kitchen and bathrooms, but the ones I've seen were full. I mean, the whole house was redone. Does that take a lot for you to adjust for budgets, or you just make it work through some changes?
Right. I mean, architects can do a lot for their clients in terms of helping them just develop the program and decide how much work to do. And there's a process for that. And I wish what I could do was make every project work in the budget. Mm-hmm. That's the thing I really wish I could do. Right. That would be the most valuable skill ever.
Right.
If anybody could do that, they would have no end of clients. And so what we find is that, you know, we don't have to use expensive materials to get a really nice outcome. We can use nice quality, regular architectural grade materials and lay them out really nicely in the right light and the right proportions to get a good outcome. Mm. And we don't have to necessarily add on and make the house much bigger. That's a pricey thing that can be avoided in a lot of cases by rearranging what you already have. And what we talked a little bit earlier about making spaces feel bigger by bringing in light differently and opening the spaces.
Right.
So we really try to understand that, like, it's your money, it's your house. We want it to be the way you want it to be, right? But right. If you have a limited amount of money to spend, let's try to get the most benefit for you out of that money. Mm. And if you decide in the process that you can't part with elements of your program, or you really want to have a high-end cabinetry system, or you really want something that's going to be more pricey, you need the addition and you can't live without it, then it's a struggle for the homeowner to have to decide, am I going to raise my budget? Am I going to look for a cheaper builder? Am I going to do some combination of these things?
Right. Are there certain materials that you would recommend for homeowners that you really like using but are on the cheaper cost? If they're looking to, let's say they want to redo their kitchen, or they're looking for, you know, countertops, what are your favorite things
sure.
to use?
I mean, these type of homes with the modern style and the simple design actually work great with IKEA. We use IKEA a lot.
Kitchens. Thank you for saying that.
And if you don't want to have an IKEA look to your kitchen, you can get the custom front panels.
Mm-hmm.
And those custom front panels are made by companies like Semi Handmade. And
amazing.
You can get different materials that IKEA doesn't offer. And we've used those with the Semi Handmade fronts in a lot of projects, and people inevitably think they're custom cabinets.
Yes, and they look great.
And they're functional, and they have at least a 10-year warranty, I think. So they may not last you forever, but it's going to last you a long time.
Right. And I think I've never noticed really the difference. You have to really, really look and dive into a kitchen to say, oh, this is an IKEA kitchen. But I think that goes with, you know, Eichler's model. He was building these homes affordably. He wasn't using the most expensive materials.
That's right.
So it's sort of in that vein of, you know, affordable living and true good design. I think good design doesn't have to be very expensive.
No, you're absolutely right. And, you know, good design can't be super cheap, but it does not have to be luxury.
Right.
Yeah.
I love that.
I think the planning is the important part, right?
Right.
Getting the right layout, getting the right configuration, and then also the curation of the materials. We got to make sure we have a good materials palette that works together. And that, you know, in each room you have something like 5 or fewer materials that are built in, right? And that gives you that backdrop feel, right? Where you're not having one material call for attention, then another material call for attention, and another material call for attention, and you get confused as to which material is the one you're supposed to focus on, right?
Right.
You can use your furniture, your art, your yourselves,
mm-hmm.
view of nature.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you have a specific landscape designer that you really like to work with, or do you also do the landscape design for your projects?
Oh, we work with landscape designers. I mean, we can do a minor landscape bit, but if you really want to have a good landscape design, and we do have a number of landscape designers that we work with who we've liked to work with over the years, who understand modern and understand the blending of the interior and the exterior.
Oh,
and depending on the size of the project and also whether the client is looking for a full service landscape architect or a landscape designer, you know, we have a list of maybe 8 or 10 different landscape people we might recommend.
Mm. And my last question for you, John, is what has been, have you seen one project really, really transform? I know you've done so many Eichlers, you've done so many mid-century modern homes. But is there one that sticks out to you? And you don't have to say where it is. Or maybe you could start off with the location and not tell us which house. But was there one that stuck out to you that you really saved it, that you really brought it back to life? And for our preservationists out there, was there one that you worked on that you found was pretty amazing to come back to life?
Well, I would say that there's two questions there. One is is there a project that was a big transformation and a notable transformation, right? And of course there was, there's a lot. But one I'm thinking of is in Palo Alto, which is, an Eichler home that had everything outdated and had been remodeled at some point with questionable choices, things like, you know, the black toilet and the wallpaper and so forth. And also, we fundamentally changed the concept of the house without adding to it.
Oh, wow.
So we moved the kitchen out of the... There was a kitchen that was sort of separated from a living dining space in the center of the house. We removed the kitchen completely from that area, and we eliminated the walls that were between the kitchen and the living room. We eliminated the fireplace that was in the middle of the glass wall. One of the things that really bothers me about the excellent designs that these architects did in the mid-century period was that they put the fireplace as a big chunk right in the middle of a wall of glass. It kind of bothers me. And we removed that.
Does.
And we just removed the walls on both sides of the living room into made it this huge open pavilion that's open to the fences on both sides of the property. Even the property is like 50 feet wide. It feels like this really massive space. And the landscape architect designed patios and a fountain and a fire pit and like, you know, it made that whole central space a big indoor-outdoor living pavilion. And the kitchen we just tucked into the front into what was used to be the bonus room.
Wow.
So I think that was probably something that was a major transformation that I always think of is, you know, wow. And when you go into the bathroom now, that if you saw the before picture and you look at the after picture, the materials are much more in tune with the house in terms of being like a natural wood and a white color, and there's big wall of glass, so it's open and bright instead of being sort of dark and dingy and sort of sweaty.
Wow. Well, I'd love to see that. I'd love to look through images, and we'll have some more information on John's work. We'll actually have, if he has any video or images, we will put that on our YouTube channel. And you can check out his website at klopparchitecture.com. That's K-L-O-P-F architecture.com. Thank you so much, John, for joining us today. And we look forward to speaking with you in the future.
Thanks, Monique.
Thank you. Thanks for tuning in to today's episode. I hope you had as much fun learning about the world of mid-century modernism as I did. You can also catch the show on my YouTube channel, where we walk through some of the most stylish mid-century modern homes in California. Just search for Mid-Century Modernism with Monique and hit subscribe. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and leave me a comment to let me know what you think. Your feedback helps me make the show even better. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time on Mid-Century Modernism with Monique.